Sue, can you go and see if the webinar is now live? My speaker is not working properly. Oh my gosh, check my speaker.
I was having trouble when people hearing. Well, actually, no, I was on one today. I was having difficulty today with Zoom, so it was some other, it was yesterday.
Oh, but you know what, Jim, I need to get into the settings so that I can let participants who can share, all panelists.
Well, you can do that online, right? I mean, you're in as the administrator, right?
I guess it looks so completely different than my screen. I'm like, oh my.
Yeah, I can hear you.
You can hear me?
Yeah.
You can hear me panicking? How's that?
Yeah.
I can hear that. Well, you got plenty of time. There's 6 minutes till the meeting.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Jim. I think I have it. I'm just gonna have to be in your office. Yeah.
Good.
Well, thank you. I'll text you if I need anything else.
It is. You call me something else.
Okay. Bye.
You got it. I won't drink too much. I'll be ready.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, bye.
Sue, can you hear me? I can't hear me. Guys, I was having I'm having trouble with my end, but I think Sue said everybody else is heard and everybody else.
I can hear you.
Rob, can you hear me?
This is Rob Porkins. Yes, I can. Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll do my best here.
What's up?
It needs to be muted.
Okay.
We're having a little technical difficulty with some of our folks getting into the meeting.
Here we go.
Who's talking there?
It's Jeff Vamus.
This is Brenda. I don't see anybody else on the attendees list that I'm expecting as a panelist.
I think they were all in the email that Gary sent. Gene Eicher and Gary Bakanoff.
Right.
Sorry, not Gary Bakanoff, but Frank Falcone.
Right. I sent them all invitations.
And there was an email,
can they join by the Zoom link? And we can move them over to panelists?
They're trying to get in via the link on the public website, on the town's website.
Okay.
Yeah, we should be able to upgrade them to panelists.
Right.
Yeah, we can
hear
him fine.
So I
okay, there's Gene.
Web meeting.
Okay, and I see Gene. And I can
now
move.
We're working on Frank Falcone, who's
okay, now
key to get on here.
Okay. Is Frank coming in on a different account? Because I don't see his name listed.
I don't know. I don't think so. Would giving you his email help? Do you want to write your email down? Oh, you're in now, Frank.
Oh, there's Frank. I see Frank.
Yeah, good. We couldn't get him in before. Okay, I'm going to mute myself then.
Well, it's 7 o'clock. Brenda, do we have everyone muted here?
We're supposed to have 5 people. So, Sheila Grant. Sheila, are you dialed in as 1-201-407-4702?
Hi, no, it's not Sheila.
Okay, well, thank you for answering.
I don't know how to mute this back there.
All right, we're waiting for Sheila. We could start the meeting and do the resolution and minutes if you would like to do that while we wait for Sheila.
Sure, let's do that. Welcome, everybody. Adequate notice of this regular meeting of the Lawrence Township Zoning Board of Adjustment has been provided by filing the annual meeting schedule with the municipal clerk as required by law, and by filing this agenda and notice with the municipal clerk, posting prominently in the municipal building, and mailing to the Trenton Times newspaper. So, would you call the roll?
Mr. Blaney?
Present.
Ms. Denver?
Present.
Mr. Fort?
Present.
Ms. Grant did not get here yet. Ms. Grant? Ms. Grant? Chairperson Holtham?
Present.
And Mr. Johnson, Mr. Camasco, and Mr. Levine have an excused absence.
Great. So, is there anything not on the agenda? Members of the public want to raise their hand using the hand raise button. Everything is obviously not currently covered. Seeing none, we'll move on to the minutes. We have minutes from April 28th, 2021 and September 29th, 2021. I would entertain a motion to approve both of them together, if that's possible. Board member like to make a motion?
Chair, I'll make a motion to move it.
Thank you, Mr. Ford. Have a second?
A second.
Thank you, Ms. Grant.
Mr. Blaney?
Yes.
Ms. Denver?
Yes.
Mr. Ford?
Yes.
Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Chairperson Holcomb?
Yes.
Thank you.
Also, the resolution of memorialization 16-21Z, use and bulk variance application ZB2-21 for the application of Dr. Radwa Saad for 3640 Lawrence Road. Someone like to make a motion to approve that?
Ms. Holtham, before someone makes a motion, I spoke with Ryan Kennedy today, the applicant's attorney, and he just requested one change in the first paragraph under jurisdiction. Dr. Saad is the sole owner doing business as Premier Dental Arts. It's a minor clarification. Okay. So we'll just make that in our office.
Okay. With that one adjustment, someone like to make a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Thanks, December. And a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you, Mr. Fort.
Mr. Blaney?
Yes.
Ms. Ember?
Yes.
Mr. Fort?
Yes.
Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Chairperson Holcomb?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, so now we're moving on to our one application on the agenda tonight, bulk and use variance application ZB3/21, major site plan, preliminary and final approval for application number SP2-21 for the Presbyterian Church of Lawrenceville. Mr. Schmier?
Madam Chair, I'll indicate that the proof of notice, proof of publication are in order, and the board has jurisdiction this evening. And maybe I could ask Mr. Bakanoff to ask all of his witnesses to raise their hand and we'll swear them in at the same time. So I, please state your name. Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give is the truth?
You swear that the testimony I'm about to give is the truth.
Thank you very much. You're all sworn in. And Mr. Bakanoff, it's all yours.
Good evening. Now, first of all, just a little administrative thing. I'm sharing Robert Sargent's computer. So that's me under Robert Sargent. So it's a distinct pleasure to be here this evening on behalf of the Presbyterian Church of Lawrenceville. Although I'm not a member and I haven't represented him before this application, I've had the pleasure of attending many different services here, their programs, and some of their community outreach over the years. As most of you probably know, the church has been here or was established way back in 1698, way at about the same time the township was coming into existence. They have, over the years, particularly over the last several decades, really ramped up their community service programs. Reverend Vamos will be here tonight to testify about some of the programs that they do, as well as talk about the purpose of the modification they're talking about for the church. Our witnesses this evening, if I could just give you a little bit of a roadmap. First, we're gonna have Reverend Vamos testify about the church, the purpose of the modifications. Then we're gonna have Frank Falcone, our engineer, give the details regarding the site plan and talk about the use of the site. After that, we've got Robert Cerruti, our architect, who will give testimony about the design. The church committee worked long and hard in doing a design that fits very well into the existing community, and in fact, already received the historic committee's approval on the design they've developed. After that, we're going to have Robert Korkich, who's an engineer and planner, who will be our cleanup hitter and give some planning testimony to fill in the blanks, if there is any, with regards to the good reasons why the board should approve this application. In addition to that, that's our primary witnesses. We've got Gene Eicher and Robert Sargent, who are also just sworn, who are available to answer questions on an as-needed basis. So without further ado, since all these folks know a lot more about what they want to say tonight than I do, I'd like to turn it over for testimony by Reverend Jeff Vamos.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's my privilege to say a few words about how this project will benefit the community and to express my own excitement and that of so many of the members of the Presbyterian Church of Lawrenceville. So I want to kind of do this in the mode of storytelling mostly, and I want to begin by going to 1953, when the leaders of this church, the Presbyterian Church of Lawrenceville, began the kind of visionary process of expanding the facilities of the church. The church was mostly just a sanctuary and a chapel. And they created at that time what was called the Youth Center. And it was called that because one of the major impetus, part of the major impetus to create it was the fact that there was no high school in Lawrence Township. No gymnasium, no place for young people to gather. And the church did a process of listening to the community, and they certainly needed more facilities for their own programs. But a major reason for building this large space, which we still enjoy now, was really to serve the community and specifically the youth of the community. The church has been a hub for the town for many, many years and sort of takes pride in that identity. I tell that story because it says something, I think, about the DNA of our congregation, what we're about. Baked into our ethos is really the central mission of serving those people outside our walls. So a few other examples. In 1810, one of our pastors founded the Lawrenceville School. My predecessor founded a mission in Haiti. Most recently, we have created a job training program for people coming from prison that's headquartered in Trenton. So I want to go back to that moment in 1953 when the church listened to the community and it resulted in the creation of what was called the Youth Center, because this is a real similar moment right now. We engaged in a pretty deep listening process to the community and listened to community needs. And out of that process came the creation of a community center that exists on the footprint of the church as it exists now. And it's called the Community Well. It's already in operation. Of course, COVID really slowed us down, but it's still in operation. And a word about the name of the community center. We call it Community Well because the word well has a kind of resonance in the Bible, although it doesn't hit you over the head. In the Bible, a well is a place of gathering, a place where community happens, where people make connections. But we use that name well also to connote wellness, which is a major theme of our programming. We realized to do this well, so to speak, required us to expand our facilities to really optimize the functioning of the community well and to enable us to offer more programs needed by the community, and hence the plan you have before us. I don't want to go on exhaustively about what will be happening in this facility, but I think maybe the best way to describe it is kind of using vignettes and stories to sort of give you an example day to sort of, again, suggest what will be happening there. So maybe you might imagine a day like today in the future, and at 7 a.m. In this new space called the atrium. In a section of it divided off by a movable wall, there will be a Zumba class, and maybe in the other section there's an aerobics class. And after that, there may be in the entire room a meditation class. And following that, we might imagine that there is a senior games group in one section and a nutrition program in the other. And the atrium serves programs like that, small programs throughout the day. We might imagine at around 8:30 or 9, a line of cars are dropping off kids for our existing preschool program. Their parents drop them off and then depart the facility. That program lasts till 3. And then after that, we might imagine some after-school programs happening in the atrium and other places for young children. In the morning, we might see a few senior classes from the Princeton Senior Resource Center happening in a couple of our classrooms. In the evening, we might imagine that there's a youth choir meeting in our chapel, and one of the members of that youth choir perhaps is in a wheelchair and can access the upper floor of our chapel because we are creating ADA accessibility through an elevator. So that may be a sample day for a weekday. Weekends would be quite different. On a Saturday, you might see a bar mitzvah that's hosted by the Jewish congregation that shares our space, Temple Micah. And then after the bar mitzvah, there's a reception in the brand new atrium. Maybe Saturday night, there's a ballroom dancing class in the atrium and maybe a small activity happening in the fellowship center as well. Sunday, of course, is our highest use day. It's when the parking lot is most utilized, and we'll continue the practice that we've continued for many, many years. If our parking lot can't hold all of the cars that are needed for a Sunday morning, we're allowed to park along 206. We also have very good relations with our neighbors, and in fact, this process has enabled us to get permission specifically from some of our neighbors to park at that time. So Lawrenceville Fuel, Gary Hullfish has agreed to allow us to use his parking lot for overflow parking, as well as Hinkle Fingles and Pryor, both located very close to our congregation. So that gives you a sense of what we're going to do with this space that you're considering. But I want to just really briefly, as a final note, say something I'm really excited about as a pastor. Because part of the reason for creating this community center was actually to encourage people who access our services to get involved in the community. So we might imagine that yoga instructor encouraging her class, his class, to get involved in the community service day that might be scheduled next month, because we're trying to raise 1,000 community service hours from those who participate in the center. That's one of the metrics of success that we intend for this community center, to get people involved in the community and in the community life. I could go on and on about why I'm really excited, and I think all of the members are really excited about the prospect of expanding our facility to enhance this use. And I really appreciate the chance to for you to consider this. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. If I can suggest, if we could just turn to our next three witnesses and let them give their testimony, I think then the board's questions or the public's questions can be addressed to the right person after the testimony is in. If that's okay with the chair, we'd like to proceed with Frank Falcone, our engineer, to give testimony.
You go ahead.
Good evening. Just one minor correction. I'm not an engineer. I'm a professional planner and land surveyor. I've been since... been one since 1987. Our company performed the topographic survey, which is the base of the site plan that you're witnessing tonight. I was directly involved in the creation and drafting of that. The property is located at 2688 Main Street, also known as 206. It's tax map lot 2, block 5801. Property is in the EGI, Educational, Government, and Institution Zone. The church is a permitted use. Property is 2.3 acres in size, about 100,000 square feet. Contains the meeting house, the fellowship center, and the administrative center, and a single family residence that Reverend Vamos occupies. There are two cemeteries on the property. Perhaps we could, I could share this screen.
That would be, you are better.
No, I am? Okay.
No, I am sharing it.
Okay. Could you switch that to me by any chance?
Are you able to share your screen?
Yeah. There
you
go.
Yep. That's much better if you can do it.
Okay, where are we at here? Are you here? Share? Okay. Not sure what I'm sharing here.
Here. Stop. Right. Let's try it again. Now, share. Where's your, is your document up?
No, I was thought I you could share the screen that was up there.
Oh, no, you can't.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, if you could
tell me,
if you could put that back up, that's fine.
Just tell me.
Okay. The property is 2.3 acres, about 100,000 square feet. Has the cemetery, a cemetery in the courtyard in the center of the site, and then just to the north where this where it says lot 2, block 5801. Topographically, the high point is at the center under the buildings, and basically the site drains in all four directions. But the majority of the surface runoff goes to the northeast corner by Lawrenceville School. Lawrenceville School surrounds the three sides of the property. And then across the Lawrenceville Road 206, there are many shops and restaurants that. The site is subject, or the site plan is subject to pre-existing non-conforming conditions. Okay, yeah. Number one, it's the minimum lot size is 5 acres, where this is 2.3 acres. There's a pre-existing condition of a lot depth, which the requirement is 600 feet, and the actual lot depth is 226.36 feet. The front yard setback is 100 feet, whereby the closest point on the meeting house there is 22.1 feet. There's a side yard setback for the principal structures of 88.3 feet, where 100 feet is required. There's an accessory use setback of 1.6 feet on the shed in the southeast corner. And there's also a variance for floor area ratio, where 0.2 is the maximum. And the proposal this evening is 2.667, and the existing is 2.392. Our planner will talk to them more specifically. There is a situation with the parking. The number of parking spaces existing is 69 spaces. Proposed is 68 spaces. And I will note that the fire official has recommended the removal of 3 spaces. Yeah. And that's around the back corner. I'm going to put the cursor right in that area. The parking aisle next down to about 13 feet, where 20 would be required by fire code. So these two spaces right in this area and this space right after, the fire official has recommended that they be removed and striped as a fire lane. With regard to the parking, with the loss of those 3 spaces, now we have 65 spaces on site, where 113 spaces is required based on the amount of seating in the meeting room.
Meeting house.
As Reverend Vamos stated, we have written agreements with 3 of the businesses across Lawrenceville Road, one being Lawrenceville Fuel, the other being the Hinkle property, and the other being the Vitella property. And with those spaces, the total would be 123 spaces available to the church on the peak days, which would be obviously be Sunday, the worship date. So in essence, we basically have 10 more spaces that is required with this agreement. There are comments in the professionals who reviewed this. I don't know if this is the appropriate time to go into them or whether we should I guess we will go into it now. I don't know if you want to hear about the architecture from the project architect first, and we could maybe come back to the memos and how we would address the comments.
Let's do that, Frank.
Yeah, okay.
Jeff, could I use your hand? Mm-hmm. Okay, so at this point, we're going to turn to Robert Cerruti, architect, his testimony.
Before you move on, Mr. Benekanoff, we'll mark that sheet number 2 as Exhibit A for your presentation.
Thank you. Did you also pick up the parking?
Yes.
Okay.
Can everyone hear me? I'm Rob Cerruti. Up on the screen is the architectural drawings, and what you're seeing now is the overall plan of the main facility. The orientation is that Main Street is at the top, the cemetery, one of the cemeteries, and the main parking is on the right side of this drawing. The manse is on the left side, and at the bottom would be the Lawrenceville School, specifically the tennis courts. The proposed one-story additions are shown shaded in light blue here and here. This is the atrium, which is a multi-purpose flexible room, and this is a lobby and bathroom, handicap bathroom and elevator addition. I'll give you a brief history of the facility. This is the meeting house. The oldest part of it is from 1765. Was expanded later. This is the masonry structure we call the chapel. There is a chapel in it, and then there are office facilities and other the pastor's office is here and the preschool is at the lower level. When Jeff Amos referenced the 1953 youth center, that is this structure, which was built as a gymnasium for the community in 1954. And then in the mid 80s, this one story addition was built at the rear for classrooms and a lounge. And that has been the facility since the mid 1980s. Down to the next drawing. Okay. Here is an enlarged plan of the atrium. The cemetery and Main Street is up this way. The meeting house is here. The chapel is here. And the corridor that Main access the internal circulation is here. As Jeff mentioned, one of the goals of this project was to create a multi-purpose space that could be easily and quickly subdivided into smaller spaces. That is not achievable in the current large youth center, which is a gymnasium, or the chapel because of very high ceilings. This would have a number of movable partitions that would allow, for instance, as Jeff said, that this could be a space at a certain time, and then an hour later, this could be the space. And that is something that the church does not have at the moment. Another goal was, of course, to bring ADA access to the meeting house, and we're proposing an ADA lift at this location, which you would enter at the lower level, go up and directly into the meeting room. Currently, there's no ADA access to the chapel at all. There currently is an exterior ramp, this location, to the meeting house, but this is the handicap parking. And in order to get to that entrance, you would have to go out a walkway to Main Street, down the sidewalk, and then up the ramp and in, which is not very convenient for someone who might be in a wheelchair, and certainly not during inclement weather or snow or so. So this way the handicap parking is right here, the entrance is right here, and they would go right in and up to the service. Sorry, I'm trying to get to the next slide. Okay, as I said, that's the enlarged plan of the addition. Here is a sketch from Main Street up high showing the proposed one-story addition. It's set back into the cemetery. It is largely glass. It's a colonnade structure, largely glass, which means in the daytime, the glass will be dark and you'll really only be seeing the white that you're seeing here. This is a photograph of what's existing now in that location. And this sheet A3 is a elevation rendering of the proposed atrium. This is the existing roof of the circulation corridor now, and we are tying into that at the two ends. And because that ceiling height is only 8 feet, we're raising the ceiling a little bit in the middle area, a couple of feet, just to address the scale of a larger group. Here is a photograph walking down the walkway. The meeting house is on the left. The gymnasium is behind it. This is the existing colonnade, which was an open arcade at one point and then enclosed in the mid 80s. And this is a quick sketch of the proposed atrium addition. We intentionally made this a low structure with a flat roof and did not want to compete in any way with the two historic structures that it is flanked by. And the historic preservation group, if I don't know if you have a report from them, had kind of agreed that this was an appropriate approach to inserting a new structure in this setting. This is just what they call cross sections through it. This is the meeting house, the fellowship center, the large gymnasium with a very high ceiling and difficult to subdivide, the circulation corridor, that room, and this is a section looking the other way back at the gymnasium. The next part of the proposal is a lobby and bathroom and elevator addition. This is on the south side of the facility. This is the youth center from the 50s. This is the chapel. This is the meeting house. And this is the one-story addition. It currently is a one-story structure to this point. There are two small bathrooms in bad need of repair. We're proposing an ADA bathroom, including a shower and a changing station, and four other plumbing fixtures in the new bathroom. And then, as Jeff mentioned, this would be an elevator which would provide access to the chapel on both of its levels. You would come in, go down half a level to the preschool, or in up half a level to the offices and the chapel. Here is an elevation view of it. This is the existing lobby at the south, and this would be the proposed one with glass and a drop-off plaza for the parents dropping off children in the morning. That was on the A1, showed you where the cars would pull over and not be in traffic. So we're picking up the same low flat roof of the existing building, just extending it out a little bit further. I think one of the comments might've been about lighting, and there's no new lighting. There's lighting up in this corner, in this corner of the facility. There would be one small spotlight in the underside of this canopy, which would direct completely down. So there would be no dark sky interference on that part. The next is just a cross section through that, and you can see the chapel in the background. And this is the new facility, and this is the fellowship center, or the former youth center. So I'm happy to answer any questions someone might have on the design. As I said, we presented to the Historic Preservation Committee, and they felt that this was agreed that a background building that was simple, low, flat roof was the best response to the two very, you know, important historic structures on either side of the structure. So that's all I have to say formally. I mean, the additions would have white stucco with white trim, which is similar to the existing facility. And if anyone has any questions, if not, I would guess maybe Rob Harkich wants to.
Rob, before you close out, just from my recollection, these slides that you're presenting part of the application we submitted, or are these things we should have marked in evidence tonight?
Well, they were the submission.
They're all part of the submission.
They're all part of the submission. The seven drawings that I just showed are exactly as was presented, as were Frank Falcone's civil engineering drawings.
Very good, thank you.
So yes, we're entering them into the exhibits, but they were part of the application.
And if it's okay, we'll hold questions and move on to Rob Korkich's testimony.
Good evening to everybody. I think that I've been here as a professional planner. I've been providing testimony in that capacity to boards throughout the state for at least 15 years.
We are having a little bit of trouble. Yeah, thank you.
We can't hear you, Rob.
Oh, that was the best part of what I had to say.
I can hear you now.
So I'm here tonight as a professional planner. I've done that for more than 15 years throughout the state. I think the last application that I did here in Lawrence before the zoning board was for the Princeton Theological Seminary for their farminary property across from the Chapin School. Anyway, I'll be discussing tonight the planning aspects of the proposed project on behalf of the church. And one of the pieces that I think is important right out of the box here is that just how Lawrence Township came about to be. And in reviewing the master plan, there's great evidence that of the fact that the township really came from the villages that were in the area, and they were collected together and eventually became Lawrence Township. And that's important because the zone in which this property is the Education, Government, and Institutions District. And it includes, of course, the church here, but it includes other churches as well. But it's also important to understand that it also includes places like Rider University, the Lawrenceville School, the Notre Dame campus, the high schools, the middle schools, as well as the municipal building, the fire training property, other large parcels, as well as small parcels. And this is important because the smaller parcels are generally in what I'm going to refer to as a village setting, like we have here at the church in the village of Lawrenceville. And the larger properties like Rider are in this more suburban areas that are between the villages. However, this zone and the zone standards apply to both equally. And so as a result, it's to some extent not surprising that there are variances that are needed on the smaller lots, where there is not the 5 acres that's available on the larger properties. Those are in many cases, many dozens of acres. But the same standards are being applied to each. And so as a result of that, we end up with several variances or deviations. We're gonna talk about these in three packages, so to speak. One is gonna be the floor area ratio variance, and then it will be the bulk variances, and then it will be the parking exception that we require as well. So regarding the floor area ratio variance, it's needed, as you've heard some testimony already, because the building floor area compared to the size of the lot itself exceeds the 20% standard. Right now, as the property sits, it's at 24%, and with this proposal, it's going up to 27%. And there's not a practical way to cure that variance by adding property or doing anything else. And so we need to be looking at, what are the variant circumstances and can they be accommodated on the property? The floor area ratio standards are included in zoning ordinances really as a mechanism for controlling, or one of the mechanisms for controlling, the intensity of development. With too much intensity, there can be challenges to the public interests, including traffic or parking or impervious surfaces or open space or just the bulk of the buildings themselves. The property as it sits right now with what has been described to you of the buildings and the site and the cemetery and the parking, all is well accommodated within the community and within this neighborhood and has been for a very long time. There are not really any negative impacts to the neighborhood as a result of this from flooding or traffic congestions or impacts to police or emergency services or other community offerings. So as it is right now, we offer that it functions well. And the proposed building addition is really very modest, as you've seen from the description of the site plan and also the buildings, that they're also, I'll call them internal to the building area. And they've all been designed to be compatible, not only to the existing buildings that are here, but also to the neighborhood as well. The church is recognized, the church use is allowed to be here, and all the other uses are allowed to be here. And what we're proposing is also an allowable use and supportive of what is the inherently beneficial use to the community of the church itself. And it is accepted that this beneficial use of it being the church facility advances the purposes of zoning. This increase in the floor area ratio really results from the building features being expanded specifically really to help internal circulation, to help ADA compatibility and modernize the facility for that purpose, and also to allow some of the programs that Reverend Ramos had talked about. It really adds to the efficiency of this internal space and the ability for more people to use this area, not only those who are physically challenged in the ADA capacity, but also just of the community benefits that were described by Rem Vamos. So I'm offering that the proposed building additions support the uses which are allowed in this zone, and there is no real negative impact from what is being proposed at this point. As a way of comparison, I'd have to say that I couldn't say that, and that would not be true, that there wouldn't be additional impacts if, in fact, this floor area ratio was increasing because the sanctuary space was getting bigger and we needed more parking, which we perhaps couldn't accommodate, or if we were moving parking spaces to put in outdoor recreational facilities, or if we wanted to build a conference venue here, which would require much more traffic. So I couldn't make this the sense that, you know, those would not have impacts. But what we are proposing, I can offer, really does not have any negative community impacts to the neighborhood or to the property itself. We do want to talk a little bit about some of the, what's referred to as the negative criteria besides the positive criteria that I've spoke about. The negative criteria are items that could potentially have an appearance or a traffic or a parking or stormwater runoff impact. And because these building additions are, I'm calling internal to the property, they're one story as has been described. They're designed to be aesthetically compatible, low bulk in their appearance, and not of consequence because of their small size to impervious area increase or stormwater runoff. And these additions don't generate more traffic or parking. And so as a result, there's really no substantial negative impacts to the neighborhood from what is being proposed. Also, the other portion of the negative criteria is about what the impact is to the zone plan and the zone ordinance. And I'd offer that this exceedance does not compromise the intent and purpose of the zone plan, modestly compromising the development intensity in a village setting to provide building access improvements like for ADA and for more convenient public use, does not carry over to a campus in a suburban setting where a few percentage exceedance in the floor area ratio can translate to very large building areas. And those can have negative impacts to traffic or impervious surfaces or other consequences. But the design of these buildings and additions are compatible with the existing buildings. And they do not compromise the streetscape that's in any way that's really along along the roadway. And so as a result, I think the variances can be granted without a detriment to the public good and without compromising the intent and purpose of the zone plan or the zone ordinances. I'd like to move on to the bulk standards that are also not being met here. And Frank Falcone described what those are already, and they really, that the lot size and the lot depth and the yard setbacks for the principal and accessory uses that are identified in the ordinances are not being met here in the way that Frank had described. One reality here is that this property is not even half of the minimum size required for this zone. So as a result, it's really not surprising that the setbacks cannot be met. It may not have been picked up on one of the exhibits that Frank showed. If you took all the setbacks and applied them to the property, you end up with a very, very small triangle that fits within the meeting house. And that's really the only property that could be developed here and meet the bulk standards. The reality is that the bulk standards are already not in conformance. And what is this proposed development of the additional building space really does not exacerbate or require have any reduction in the existing setbacks that are already exist. What's really happening here is that within those setbacks, particularly the front yard and rear yard setbacks, there is more building space that is now within those setback areas than there was before. But as I've described, it has really been designed in such a way that there really is no place to add on to the property without being in a setback someplace. And that because of the building and the way it is being designed, that there really doesn't compromise any of the village concepts that we would associate with the bulk standards in this area. typically in the village, the buildings are closer to the road. They're on smaller lots. So, and what we see here at the on the church property is very typical for the other properties that are here in the village. Curing these bulk variances, again, not practically achievable due to the surrounding property uses. And so as a result, and with there not really being significant impacts to any of the bulk standards beyond what they already impacted, I offer that, again, there that there are no negative impacts from what we are proposing to be doing here because of the minor changes to the bulk standards. And again, because this is in a village setting instead of the suburban setting, both of which are covered by the zoning standards for this space, that the fact that these can be accommodated readily without being a detriment to the public good or without compromising the intent and the purpose of the zone plan or the zone ordinances. The last item I want to talk about is the parking exception. Again, you've heard testimony about that, that while there is not the required on-site parking by the zone standards, that I offer that the church has been here for a long, long time. It has been accommodated in the neighborhood and in the village area as one without any kind of detriment from the parking. It's always been able to be accommodated. And we've been able to specifically identify that there are spaces that have been that meet the zone standards within the area, within a reasonable distance from the church property itself, that meet the zone standard, and so therefore, and allow for having enough parking. So as a result, the building additions do provide better building access and building the building use and better building use by the community. It's expected that parking will have the same practices and patterns with the proposed buildings additions as it does today. So therefore, I believe that this parking exception is supportable based on all the testimony that you've heard from us tonight. And that's what I have, Mr. Bakanoff.
Thank you, Mr. Korkish.
Thank you, Mr. Korkish. Just a couple of questions to confirm your professional opinion. First of all, you mentioned it's inherently beneficial use. You also find this property particularly well suited for the programs that will be utilized in a modest expansion?
It is particularly well suited mainly because the facilities are already here, and certainly the intent of the municipal land use law and the purposes of zoning are intending to best utilize existing facilities as opposed to going out and needing to develop new facilities. The facilities are here, they're already being well used, but they will be even better used and more fully used by more people, which is certainly a benefit rather than having new facilities to be built for the same purposes.
And is it your opinion that the functionality and appearance of the proposed expansion will fit well within the neighborhood?
I do. I think that there's been great care taken not only on the property itself to be compatible with the buildings that are here, but also that the design itself is compatible with what is going on here in the village of Lawrenceville and the streetscape. There's not really any impact that's going to be negative to that.
Okay. And do you see, is it your opinion that the benefits of granting this application would far exceed any potential negative impacts?
I do. The negative impacts are negligible, if even measurable, and the benefits, as they have been described, are substantial from the programs that can be offered here and from the support of what is inherently beneficial use.
Thank you, Mr. Korkish. Madam Chairman, that concludes our direct primary testimony. We have witnesses that are prepared to respond to the memorandum or answer questions from the board or the public. Please let us know how you'd like to proceed.
Sure. I think we're going to start with any questions from our town professionals, and then we'll move on to questions from board members, and we'll see where we are. And if we require, you know, asking any of your additional witnesses any questions, then we can go up from there.
Very good. Thank you.
Yep. Ms. McManus.
Hi, folks. I'm Beth McManus. I'm filling in for Jim Kyle, who authored our planning memo. So I just had a couple questions. A couple of those are actually in the memo, but let me start with a couple of others that, one of them does relate to the memo. But I heard the testimony regarding, I guess this is for, well, I'll take whoever, whichever witness thinks is best able. But I saw the, or heard the testimony regarding to the lighting proposed for the lobby addition on the side of the building. And I'm not sure if I missed it, but I'm wondering if there's also exterior lighting proposed for the proposed atrium facing Main Street.
Beth, I can answer that, I think.
Great.
There is no new proposed lighting. Currently, that is not really a main entrance. It's more of an exit for most of the time. On Sunday mornings, it may be used. There are several low bollard lights, like a foot high off the ground along the walkway, and they would remain. And there would be a small wall lantern on the at the front, at the doors that are exiting from the atrium, just for safety purposes.
So the wall lantern is newly proposed then?
Well, it would be. I think it may not be on the drawing, but we can add it to it. But it would be a small downlight at the door just for safety in exiting.
And I heard that, so now the lighting on the front is proposed to be downlit. And I also heard the testimony before that the lighting adjacent to the proposed lobby will also be downlit. And I think that's very good. That'll really help only provide lighting in the manner that we need it, as opposed to elsewhere towards the neighbors or creating any sky glow. My last question is, if the board issues an approval for this application, is that something that you would be willing to add to the plans as a condition of that approval, the lighting for that's proposed for both building additions?
Of course.
That's great. And then I do have a couple other questions, but they're all outlined in the memo. So I can go through those, or if you folks plan on handling all the memos at once, I'll wait my turn, so to speak.
So Beth, if you don't mind, why don't you go ahead with your questions so we know what your concerns may be.
Sure. My first question is in regard to the sycamore tree. It looks like from the plan, it might be in a bit of a incorrect location. And so I just wanted to get some testimony on that. And if that's true, as a condition of any approval that may be granted, I would recommend that the tree location be corrected, if indeed that's what's necessary.
I can respond to that. There is a small multi-stemmed, we called it a sycamore, at the location that we showed on the plan. However, the tree you see in this picture with all the ivy on it, that was not on the plan. And I went out today and identified that as a 36-inch maple tree. You can see it's covered with ivy. Many of the branches have been compromised. And that is the only tree that will be removed, more so based on its condition, and it's located in the atrium, the proposed atrium, that will be removed as part of the site plan.
Okay, so I'm sorry. So it's not that the tree is in the wrong position. It's just that the tree in the picture is simply not the tree noted on the plans.
That's correct. There is a tree at the one noted on the site plan. However, mm-hmm. this tree in this picture you see is not on the site plan, and okay. It will be removed. Because number one, it's in the way, and number two, it's in very poor health.
Okay. And can we also have that note added to the plan?
Absolutely. I've already done that, to be honest with you.
Thank you. Let's see. And then, Frank, I think all the questions are for you, actually.
That's okay.
So the next couple of questions are in regard to stormwater management. I just had a question in regard to the drywall. There's an existing drywall. And I'm wondering if that's going to be impacted by this development and how that might be accounted for. And sort of similarly, we noticed there were some soil logs, and I'm wondering if there's stormwater management features that need to be incorporated or discussed this evening. So if I could, I'd just like to sort of lump those two questions in one, just to get a handle on the stormwater management proposed.
Yeah, not a problem. Yeah, that's fine. The thing we labeled as a dry well is in this area, and really is probably not considered a dry well, but just a collection area. It takes in some downspouts and a sump pump from the existing building. From there, there's a pump in there, and that pumps whatever accumulates in there to the what I'm going to call the northeast corner, to where this drainage swale is. That will all have to be located and rerouted in whatever way we feel appropriate. Obviously, the atrium is being built right over top of it, so it has to be eliminated. With regard to the soils testing, we did some soils test in a, there's an existing gravel swale back in, along the common line between the Lawrenceville School near the tennis courts and the church property. We went out there and did some soils test to see if that could be converted into some type of stormwater bioswale. However, we then did an analysis of the increase in the runoff that the additions would create. And we also went back to the 1984 expansion and determined that only 0.29 cubic feet per second of runoff would be generated. So we then abandoned the bioswale for now and thought that that was pretty much a negligible amount of runoff that that stormwater would not be required.
Thank you. And I think, and you're below the major development threshold for NJDEP? Okay, I thought so.
Yeah.
Okay. And then my last question is in regard to the ADA standards and the proposed changes to those. I just wanted to get confirmation that you're able to continue compliance or to be compliant with the ADA requirements for parking.
Yes. Go back to the other. There are currently, site plan shows four existing ADA parking spaces. Actually, there's five. And based on the ADA requirements, between 101 and 150 parking spaces, which obviously only 60 some are on this property, five spaces are required. So that is the ADA accessible route to the elevator, and we meet the ADA requirements for the number of spaces required.
Okay, thank you. And then my last question, although it's not listed in the memo, is just in regards to the parking. I heard you say that there was a proposal initially for loss of one parking space. You're going to comply. You're willing to comply with the recommendations from the fire here in Lawrence Township, and presuming the board agrees, that would further reduce your parking demand by three spaces. And I just wanted to put a finer point on the programmatic proposal for the atrium. It seems natural that the lobby proposal will have a de minimis at best impact on the parking, given that it's just a lobby and restrooms. But I wonder if you folks can provide a little bit of testimony on a finer point on what additional programming in terms of additional parking demand may be generated by the proposed atrium, or if you can make specific findings that the new atrium space will not actually increase parking demand on the property.
Yeah, but Pastor Jeff actually did a study with regards to the proposed programs, so I think he can speak to that question.
That would be great.
Hold on just a
minute. Yeah, it's this one. Yeah.
That is not.
That's not it.
Study. Excuse me.
This is what you look at.
I thought I had it queued up. Bear with me just one moment, if you would.
That's okay. And maybe while you're pulling that up, In regard to your offsite parking arrangements, are those formalized arrangements with a long-term lease, or are those handshake agreements with the local business owners?
It's kind of in between. what we have is a long-term standing arrangement with those neighbors, but in order to be preparing for this meeting and the question which you just asked, we do have letters from the three neighbors that were mentioned confirming that they do provide overflow parking for the one time of the week that there is a need for some overflow parking.
And then here's one from
thank you.
Her Pinkle. Apologies.
That's okay. Take your time.
Could have sworn that I had that.
Jeff, with regards to the study, if you're having a hard time putting it up, you could just talk us through it.
Much of the programming for the atrium consists of drop-off programs. So, for example, I mentioned at the beginning that at the beginning of the day we have preschool and a very elegant solution to parking. They drop their kids off and then they leave. I've mentioned also a choir program for junior high kids. The same effect is in place there, where parents drop their kids off and then they depart. In the study that we've done, the maximum number of cars required for the program on a kind of typical weekday, imagined future when the community center is fully operational and the atrium and this expansion is in place, would be 62 cars. Again, I wish I could pull it up. Here we go. Okay. Apologies for wasting your time here. So this is kind of a imagined future typical day, and it probably skews toward a more maximal use than what a typical day would be. But you see from 8 to 9, these would be the cars represented by staff of the preschool. And these would be an imagined number of cars for a program happening in the atrium and so on throughout the day. And you see that the kind of maximum use would be from 11 to 12. And then we do have a lot of evening meetings. So 7 to 8 would probably be another time when there are going to be a lot of drop-off programs for younger people, but there are a lot of church meetings that happen at that time. So we would predict that the maximum number of cars parking spaces needed would be 68. I don't know that it was mentioned before that on Sunday mornings, we also have permission to park along 206. And so that on those days gives us the capacity to handle whatever. And that's the most intensive use that we have is a Sunday morning when we have, you know, hopefully a fairly full meeting house. It hasn't been the case lately. I hope that that's helpful.
It is. Thank you very much. I think that answers my questions, although I'm certainly available for the board if folks have questions for me later on. Thank you.
Thank you. I did actually have a follow-up question for Reverend Vamos with regard to the use of the atrium. So I know when you're talking about parking demand during the week, that makes sense. On the weekend, is there ever going to be a situation where there is programming going on in the atrium while there are services going on in the meeting house?
No, I mean, I suppose there could be a very rare case when we might have something going on in our space. Recently we've had to spread out, and so that's a rare circumstance where we've had to use our fellowship center as overflow. so that we don't have strained capacity and social, so we can enable social distancing. But I can't imagine a situation where we'd have a packed meeting house and a packed atrium or a fellowship center. There are uses that happen one at a time in that circumstance.
Thank you. Similarly, when you were talking about the drop-off programs, I was just wondering if maybe you could bring up the site plan to show where parents typically stop to drop their kids off, and maybe give testimony about how parents actually do the drop-off process. Do they just, you know, let their children out of the car? Do they walk them over to the door of the preschool? What that process looks like.
Do you want me to answer that, or who is to whom is that directed?
You,
I think. It's you. Just okay. How it operates.
Teachers beating the parents.
So this would be the area where present, I mean, there's a fairly wide driveway here. And at present, they drop off. This doesn't show the area where the kids play. There's an outdoor play yard, which is also the backyard of my house, the manse. So they would be dropping off their kids here. In other circumstances, it's not so formalized. You can't really organize, say a choir rehearsal for junior high kids. But they would park in the parking lot, and they would simply, or you know, often what they'll do is drop off here or drop off at the north entrance, and then continue out of the facility. That's generally how that works. If a parent wanted to come and accompany their child into the meeting house, they could do that, but then they'd go right back out to the parking lot and maybe occupy a space for 10 minutes.
May I just speak to one thing there?
Of course.
Yeah. Okay. I'm a member here, and I'm sorry. You first. Okay. I'm a member here, but I've also been the administrator here. I retired 3 years ago. But the way the preschool works is that when they drive in, the teachers meet the cars pulling in. And so the children are dropped off right out of the cars into the care of the preschool teachers and aides that are here. So in that particular case, it really is just a drop off. They pull in, they drop off, and then they go around and exit. That was all I wanted to add.
Thank you. I'd invite any other members of the board, or I don't know if Ms. Kramer has any questions for any of the witnesses.
I do, if I could. Okay. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Could one of the expert witnesses provide some information about the construction impact on the existing cemetery?
Jean Eicher would be, I think, good to speak to that, or Rob.
Yeah, we did actually speak with the Historic Preservation Advisory Committee about this. Yes, we would be building over some of the area where there are gravestones presently. The interesting thing that we have found out in looking at our archives and in stories that have been passed down, and actually one I heard from our former pastor, Dana Furon, is that many of those stones have been relocated and are not necessarily marking spots where there are actual graves. In the early days, people would bury their loved ones around the meeting house, which has expanded 3 times. So every time they would move, they wouldn't move the bodies, but they would move the gravestones to another location. And when our youth center, or now fellowship center, was built back in the 1950s, that again happened. And those gravestones were taken and reset in other areas in the graveyards. In the 1970s, I'm going to guess, Dana Furon was the pastor here, and was in his office one day, and there was someone with a backhoe, a small backhoe, out in the yard digging up a ground for putting in some drainage. And he was distinctly staying between, you know, not disturbing where the gravestones were. And he actually dug up a grave where there was no gravestone. It was one of the old, you know, coffins that isn't rectangular and had been compressed to just a few inches. And the only thing remaining in it was a button. So Dana came out and they blessed the grave, and then Mr. Mazinski filled it back in. But it is further kind of evidence that there aren't always graves where there are gravestones in a cemetery. They've been moved many times in various instances. So when we spoke to the Historic Preservation Advisory Committee about them and explained that our congregation, for as long as I can remember, and I've been a member here for over 40 years, and long before that I know, has always, always been very interested in the history of this church and its place in the community. We had the gravestones reset and cleaned 3 years ago in 2018. They're very important to us. We have maps, we have directories saying who is buried there, what the engravings are, and so forth. So our proposal is that, yes, we will need to move the gravestones that are located in that area, but they will be reset as per the request of the Historic Preservation Advisory Committee in an area probably together with a plaque or some kind of memorial showing that these are gravestones that were moved when this building was done. As a matter of fact, we already have a memorial on the property honoring the graves of the folks who were who's already have been moved in memory of all of those people. So it's again very important to us, and it is something that would be treated with great respect.
Okay, thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Bakanoff, could I add one quick note to that addendum? Just, you know, the prospect of digging up bodies, we don't want to leave you with that. We actually have a member who is a professional geologist and does ground penetrating radar, and he's done a survey of this area of the ground, the full area where the atrium will be situated, and there's no remains, there's nothing anywhere near where the grade would need to be for footings and for the slab and so forth. So we've already checked that out.
That is good to know. That really was the thrust of my question. Can you submit that information for our file? And also, Gary, yeah. Bakanoff, can you submit the letters from the property owners regarding the overflow parking for our file?
Of course.
And Frank Falcone, with regard to the existing drywall, drainage pumping, sanitary, you'd mentioned that it would have to be rerouted. We would need to see the plans in advance for whatever improvements you're going to need to do in that area.
We will provide. It's going to be hard to find, but we'll do our best.
Well, you're going to reroute it, correct?
Yes. Yes.
So we would need the plans for the rerouting, not necessarily what is there now. I know you haven't shown conceptually on the plans, but just how you intend to take it around the atrium, through the atrium, under the atrium is what we would need to see.
Okay. We will provide.
Okay. The 36-inch tree to be removed is technically a specimen tree that one would need a waiver to remove, unless it is your professional opinion that the tree is dead and dying and hazardous. Is that the case, or are you requesting a waiver to remove the tree?
I would say we would request a waiver at this time. If need be, we could provide an arborist to confirm that it is the disease to the point where can I live on.
I can also speak to that.
I can speak to that also. When I was administrator here for over 28 years, there were many times that tree dropped large limbs. And we have a master gardener who is a member of the Buildings and Grounds Committee here. And she has confirmed with me that the ivy-covered tree and the fact that it is a very old tree and is dropping larger limbs is shows that it's an unhealthy tree, and that we also want to be sure that we are protecting not only people, but also the historic buildings by not having limbs, because you can see it's right across the pathway from the historic meeting house.
So based on that testimony, we would request a waiver and can supply additional information if necessary.
I don't think the additional information is necessary based on the photos and the testimony of your witness.
Thank you.
I think the resolution should so note that though. The only other thing I had was in the resolution, we should note that the parking space issue is a variance, not a design exception. I don't have any other questions or comments at this time.
Thank you. I'd like to open it up to any members of the board who may have questions about the testimony. You're welcome to just unmute yourself and jump in. Okay, seeing none. Ms. McManus, I was wondering, I saw in the report the description of the D4 variance, and maybe helpful just to remind the board members of the standard that we need to use in order to evaluate that.
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Beth, do you swear the testimony you're going to give is truthful?
I do.
Thank you, go ahead.
All right. The applicant here is proposing a use, they're seeking a use variance. And more specifically, it's not just simply a use as in a prohibited use, but this is an FAR variance, a D4 variance. And D4 variances carry different criteria requirements than the other use variances generally. Although I will say it's actually similar to what we see for the D3 variance. But regardless of all that, the criteria is such that it asks for the board to consider whether or not the site can really accommodate any of the impacts or maybe any problems that might be created by the expansion of the floor area beyond that which is permitted, the FAR of 0.2 in this zone's case. And so the question to the board is not just simply, is the site particularly suited? Does it meet the purposes of of the municipal land use law? It's really, what are the impacts of the use and if or how they can be accommodated on the site given the site's conditions, the surrounding area, and the proposed improvements that are within the application. And so it asked the board to weigh those impacts against any mitigation and to impose reasonable conditions that might help to mitigate those impacts. In addition, the board also has to weigh the negative criteria, which is whether there's any substantial detriment to the zone plan and whether or not there's any substantial detriment to the public good. But in addition to that, I also wanna make clear that we have another bit of a nuance with this application. And that is because it's a house of worship. That means that it falls under the inherently beneficial criteria. And so that means that it presumptively satisfies that positive criteria. And while we don't have the typical positive and negative criteria that we see in say a D1 variance, the inherently beneficial status should still be recognized and is part of what the board should incorporate in its thinking about whether and how the site can accommodate any impacts from the increase in the FAR. And then my last point is, as you may already recognize, an FAR variance is not subject to the Medici test, the reconciliation of the master plan test. So that's not a criteria that this applicant needs to address.
Thank you very much. Mr. Fort, you've unmuted. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I was just wondering, I'm looking through our packet. Do we have any traffic studies on this or anything? Is there gonna, add more traffic to the area?
Based on my conversations with the applicant's attorney when we initially received this application, there is no plan to increase membership, just to better use the facilities that they have. So I did not request our traffic engineer provide any information or a report.
Thank you.
Any other members of the board? If not, then I'll open it up to any members of the public who may have questions for the witnesses who gave testimony here tonight. If you'd like to ask a question, you can use the raise hand button and we'll call on you in order. Okay, not immediately seeing any. I'll ask any board members if they'd like to make a comment based on the application and the testimony that they've heard this evening related to the criteria that Ms. McManus laid out for approving or deciding about this project. I myself was, you know, certainly we can agree that the church being a house of worship satisfies any positive criteria and is an inherently beneficial use. And in terms of the accommodating any problems that may be associated with an increase in the permitted floor area ratio, it seems to me that the testimony we heard tonight suggests that they're not going to increase the use of the site at hours where it's already being maximally used. I'm persuaded that they have longstanding agreements with neighbors that can accommodate the parking needs. I'm very happy to see that these structures, you know, we love historic structures, and problem with them is often that they're not ADA accessible in very convenient ways. And it seems like the project that's being proposed tonight goes a good distance in making those buildings more accessible to more members of the community. And especially if they're going to have more people on site participating in activities, I think that's always a great thing. But I would love to hear from other board members, sharing their views on this. Well, hearing nothing, if anyone would like to make a motion related to this application.
Yeah, if I may, Madam Chairman, we addressed the professional memorandum. We did receive some other committee reports. I don't know if we need to address those in any way or whether we can just end our testimony at this point. I do have one reservation, and that is I didn't hear from the other board members, and I recognize we only have 5 voting members this evening. I would love to hear from the other board members to understand if they have any concerns that we might be able to address. Normally, for a D variance, I'd be looking for 7 voting members. However, I do think this is a really strong application that hopefully the board sees the benefits of granting the application. So I don't want to delay things unnecessarily, but I would like to hear, if possible, if any other board members have any concerns.
Madam Chair, this is Joe Blaney, board member. No concerns. I think it's a nice application. You guys did a nice job putting it together. No concerns. I live not too far away, so I'm very familiar with the property, and it's good to see ADA compliance at any time. So no concerns from me.
Thank you.
Hi, Chair. I just wanted to say as well, I think the candidates did a really good job on the application, and I'm excited about the ADA. One question I do have is I'm looking at the Environmental and Green Advisory Committee meeting minutes, and they had put in suggestions to make it more environmentally friendly, the space, provide bike parking, EV charging, public transportation, carpooling. I just want to know, are you going to plan on adopting any of those environmental suggestions from that meeting minute?
I think Frank is going to speak to that, and let me put up the site plan here. If I could just really quickly say we already have fairly ample bike parking in the facility that will remain when the project is completed.
Frank. And the bus.
And the bus stop is right right outside the church.
Yes.
With respect to the bike parking, there is an existing area where there's a bike rack. There's a sidewalk that comes in from the Lawrenceville School up here, and there's a bike rack in this location. As was mentioned, there's a bus stop right in front of the church. The Environmental Commission did speak to providing some green stormwater infrastructure. However, we did testify that the runoff is very minimal. The township engineering memo also confirmed that. There was talk about a existing buried oil tank, which is located on site plan right in this area. That tank is relatively new. It's pretty much state of the art with all the safety features involved. So we don't see that as any kind of major issue. It's maintained regularly. We talked about the tree, which the Environmental Commission mentioned. That's the only tree that will be impacted, and it is in very poor health. We talked about the lighting, and the last thing in the memo from the Environmental Commission was EV charging, and there is one EV charging space in this area right there. So we feel that we've addressed the recommendations of the Environmental Commission.
Oh, great. Thank you. And, you know, just as a general comment, you know, I think I saw recently that the Board of Public Utilities is offering UV charging grants. So just as a general comment, it might be something worth looking into to add more. Thank you so much.
Hi, Olga Dember here. I also honestly have no concerns. I believe that everything has been addressed today. And I do agree that obviously this is an inherently beneficial use, especially as the membership of the church isn't going to be altered and you're just seeking to improve the use of your site. And I commend the steps you're taking to make the building more accessible.
Thank you.
Ms. Grant, do you have anything to add? Go ahead. Looks like Ms. Grant may be having some difficulties. She is unmuted, but we can't hear her.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I was just concerned about the stones that were near the tree that's going to be removed. Whether are they disturbing a grave with those stones being there or what? I don't know. That was my concern. And I think they said they're just going to put a plaque there in the place of the stones.
Yeah, well, I think Rob could say more about the intent to replace those gravestones and replant them in a very respectable way and a place that would make sense. And as I said earlier, we did a survey, a ground penetrating survey that showed that there's nothing that would disturb any grave that comes anywhere near where footings would have to be dug or the slab would have to be placed. So we wouldn't be disturbing any human remains or grave or anything like that.
So what will be placed there? Would it be like a plaque or something in the ground, in the stone?
We met with the Historic Preservation Committee and they had suggested, and we agreed, that they be reassembled in one of the two cemeteries, either to the north side of the meeting house or the one in front of us, with a plaque denoting that these were relocated in order to construct the Furon atrium. But these are just about 10 10 or 12 gravestones. Mm-hmm. And as we testified before, there's really not a connection between actual human remains and these stones, as they were likely relocated for the 1954 Youth Center. So the historic committee wanted them to be displayed outside so that the community can appreciate the history that is embodied in the cemetery there.
Okay, that was my only concern. I agree with, you know, it will make the neighborhood a little atmosphere a little bit better. And that was my only concern. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So with that, Mr. Schmier, I've heard during this process a few conditions, very minor, about adjusting the site plan to reflect the lighting, and there were a few more. Maybe you could run through those.
Okay. Well, there were a couple of technical conditions in Brenda's memo. I assume the applicant is okay with those. Gary?
Frank, we have any issues with the recommendations in Brenda's memo?
I don't think we did. I think we touched on them, but let me just double check.
I mean, one of them was about the existing tree for which you've asked for a waiver that will come down. Soil erosion and sediment control plans will have to be a separate permit to Brenda.
Yes.
Engineering estimate and the outside permits, the other agencies that you'll have to clear.
Yes, they're all accepted.
They're all pretty standard.
Yes.
The information on both buildings, the lighting, the information needs to be added to the plans, as Beth suggested. The relocation correction that Frank mentioned, we'll just simply make sure that the plan reflects that. We'll add a request as indicated for a waiver for the removal of the existing tree since it's in poor health. The letters from the three property owners indicating that they'll provide the overflow parking when necessary. Brenda asked for the plan for the rerouting of the storm water. We'll flip your parking waiver to a variance because that's what it is under our code. And we could also add a condition to address Ms. Grant's concerns about the relocating the gravestones and the markers into the existing cemetery so that they're properly displayed. I think that's it.
All right. Well, with that, I would entertain a motion to approve application. Let me get the number right. Application ZB3-21, major site plan, preliminary final approval for application SP2-21, Presbyterian Church of Lawrenceville, 2688 Main Street.
Chair, this is Joe Blaney. I'll make a motion to approve.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
A second.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Mr. Blaney?
Yes.
Ms. Thember?
Yes.
Mr. Fort?
Yes.
Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Chairperson Holcomb?
Yes.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you all for your time and have a wonderful holiday season.
Yes. Do the same.
Thank you all and stay safe. Yeah.
Board members, we just have something short, which is to approve the 2022 zoning board meeting schedule. So that was circulated with our packets. Hopefully everyone has a chance to see it. It looks like we're sticking to our same schedule, third week of the month. So motion to approve the
meeting
schedule.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Can we just do all in favor? Do we need to? Okay. All in favor, raise your hand. Aye. Say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Well, Brenda, do we have a meeting in January? Do we have application for that?
Yes.
I know we have an organization meeting, but.
We will have two homeowners on the meeting also.
Okay.
Two homeowners, C variances. I'm not sure if we'll have a new member by then because we're still down one from when Peter resigned. For that reason, I set up two homeowners.
Okay.
And then we will continue with use variance in February.
Okay. All right, everyone. Well, thank you so much. Have a happy new year. We'll see you in January. And yeah.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Bye.
Happy holidays. Bye-bye.